I wanted to build really this morning on our theme of a few weeks ago for our prayer Sunday when we were looking at workplace and we were praying for our workplace. And by workplace, we meant like the area that we, the community that we live in, or the maybe the educational establishment that we're part of, or the place where we work, or the home that we're raising children in, or, you know, various settings. And really wanting to build on that today. I want to speak a bit about prison Sunday that we had last week. Want to look at some of Jesus' teachings, and then we've got three stories from Within Hope, from the kind of workplace to share to finish. I think to start with, I've got some fresh or two extra workplace selfies. This is love you to send in some workplace selfies so that we can have up in the prayer center picture of you in your kind of work context or your sort of daily life context, and then we can be praying for each other. So this is the list. This is Lucy, and there's another one just here. This is from Helen. There's Rach homeschooling. There's Adam at his desk. Christy hosting Celebrate Recovery. Sally in her office, NHS. Kat with her teaching. There's Hannah up in the office, just over there. Sophie at home with Margot. Oh, there's Hannah again. There she is, double Hannah. Oh, there's Sophie again. Oh, and then these are the two new ones. We've got Duncan. There he is. I don't know if you've ever... it's a great place to visit Duncan's office. I love it in their house. And very cool place. There he is. And there's Emma with her new job working. I forget what it's called. What's the new... North Bristol Advice Centre. Yeah. So there's a refresh of some workplace selfies. Keep sending them in. It's great to know where each other spend our days, where we work. So we'll start off on the prison. And last Sunday, I think there were five of us went into Hawfield Prison just after the Gloucester Raid for our second prison Sunday. We've got a team of about 15 now who are on the prison Sunday team. And this came out of a church meeting that we had last year sometime when we were considering, should we plant a second service? What's a growth strategy for us as a church? Would planting a second service be a good idea? And one of the things that came out of that really was, you know, one of the real passions and hearts that we have as a church, a dream, is to go to places where there isn't already a sort of established church. And so out of that, we've been going into the prison. And that's an intention to go at least once a month going forward. And we had a brilliant time there last week. And I know that you were praying here whilst the team was in the prison there. So it feels like it's something that we're doing together as a church. It's not just the people that are in the prison, but it feels like a community owned thing. And I came away from that time with quite a sort of spring in my step of what we'd experienced in the prison, and a kind of buzz and a kind of joy from it. And that's the nugget of what I want us to what I want to get into today is that there is a joy in doing ministry together with Jesus. And I think that can apply to all of us in all of our different daily and regular settings and situations. And I want to show that as we go through. But I think of some other examples for me would be like when we first started teaching Living Free, the Living Free course, which some of you will have experienced in Hope back in around 2005, 2006. Alice and I would come back from on a Wednesday night, typically having run Living Free, and we couldn't get to sleep because we were so buzzy. We were like, oh, that was so fun. We saw God speak and God did this, and we had these stories, and there was a real joy and there was a real excitement. And I just got a message from Meredith. I think it wasn't last week, it was the week before. She'd just been and spent some time with someone and was just able to really encourage them and help them in their faith. And she was so pumped afterwards. There was this real sort of, I got to really help and encourage this person. And so this is the kind of, I think, the joy of ministry together with Jesus. And I want to help us this morning to recognize that and find opportunities for that in our everyday lives. So I'm aware that the term ministry might sound a little bit religious, a bit heavy. No, not necessarily heavy, but a little bit religious. And so to unpack what I mean by that is a word we see through the Bible, particularly in the letters that Paul writes. And I think, you know, when Jesus came and lived, didn't he? And he taught his disciples and everyone who was there to listen, really, a deeper way to live, a way of connection with God that was beyond their previous experience in most cases, gave them a new way to see the world, a new way to live, so don't just, you know, don't steal, but give generously. Don't just not murder, but don't even hate people. You have it. It's a whole different way that Jesus showed us how to live, and then gave us the power to live it from the inside out, from this kind of place with God. And so we see him in the Gospels being the personification of that different way of living. And then he sends out his disciples to do the same thing, to bring that better life, that fuller life, that richer life. And so that's what I mean by ministry together with Jesus, so that wherever we are, we can live out of that connectedness with Jesus in such a way that it brings life and fruit and goodness to our different work contexts, our different life contexts. So let's go back to prison Sunday to start with. And so last week, Nikki and Stan and Bex and Sam Beanie and myself, I think there were five of us that went in, and we joined with... Ossian. Pastor Ossian from God's House was leading the service. And Tope, some of you might know Temi Tope, he's the guy that led the football tournament yesterday, hosted the football tournament. He was playing keys for the worship. And actually, I've got sort of 4 points that I wanted to draw out of this. And this is my first one, is this kind of having a sort of posture ready to minister. And we went into the prison these first two times that we've gone in. We didn't have a... We weren't sort of leading the service. We're kind of joining in with Ossian. But we had this kind of posture as a team of we're just ready to serve. We'll do whatever. There was someone from God's House was going to be joining us to lead the singing, lead the worship. But actually, her ID didn't work, so she couldn't get in. So spontaneously, we need someone from amongst us needs to lead the singing, lead the worship. And what was so cool was that actually everyone, maybe apart from myself, everyone within the team was up for it. And so Sam Beanie ended up kind of leading, and Nikki and Stan joined. But what was so cool was that everyone in the team was just there, ready to go. Yeah, I haven't done this before, haven't led singing before, haven't been like this in a prison before, but let's do it. And they were ready to go. And then afterwards, when we were talking with the prisoners afterwards, and got a chance to have some good interactions with them, like, the team were just brilliant. And I was just looking at everyone thinking, these guys are so much better than I am at just relating to people, you know, off cold like this. And at such a brilliant team. And I thought, actually, I think that's the nature of, you know, many, many people here and much of the church, is that we're really capable. And you see what Jesus did was he threw people in the deep end, you know, pretty early on. And I think we just need opportunities often to be kind of thrown in the deep end, opportunities to minister. That was my kind of first observation, was that we were ready to minister. The second one is, these are ChatGPT images. I'm quite chuffed with them, as you'll see as they progress through. Describe what I wanted, and it gave it to me beautifully. This one is that ministering together with Jesus is often crossing a cultural boundary. So he said to his disciples, go into all the world, go to different nations and teach them my ways, show them my ways. Going into the prison is going into a different culture. Don't really know the kind of social appropriateness of stuff, the social cues. You know, it's a bit scary. It's like, are we going to be safe? What's going to happen? What are the exits? How do we get out? I haven't got any keys. and it's a bit like, it reminds me when I went to China in 2006, landed in Beijing, and we were with Alice's brother, and he speaks Chinese, and he and Alice's parents went off in a taxi in front of us, and then we were in a taxi behind, just me and Alice and the taxi driver. No, we couldn't speak a word of Chinese, didn't have a mobile phone, couldn't read any signs. I thought if we got lost, we'd just completely, well, I don't know what we would do. You know? There's often the way with ministering together with Jesus, is that we are in a different cultural context, and that will apply in workplaces often as well, but that's certainly what it felt like in the prison. The third thing was this image here, is that this is quoting Becca Hackett, we're only allowed to take in Jesus. And we had a bit of a funny moment on this, because we said to Ossian, could we take, you know, we love a value for us here is breakfast, isn't it, at Hope, can we take in teas and coffees, maybe some biscuits, I upped that to croissant, you know, for the prisoners. And And Ossian was laughing at us, saying, "You guys are such lovely Christians, but no, these men are locked away from life comforts. They're not allowed to have privileges like teas and coffees." And so sadly, we were like, "Okay, we can't even take in a little sweetener, little gift." So you know, all we could take in was Jesus. And there's something quite healthily raw and vulnerable about that. Something quite good about that. And the fourth thing was out of our comfort zone. So this is someone being stretched out of their comfort zone. And, you know, the example that I gave already was just spontaneously leading worship. And it was a really special time, actually. There was a moment when Sam sort of paused in the singing and just said a few things. And it felt like it had changed the atmosphere a bit. And there was a sort of sweet togetherness. There was a bit of arguments and stuff at the beginning of the service. And a few guys were taken out, actually. Like, kicked off a little bit at the beginning. But this was a really sweet, sweet moment in the service of, like, a sort of togetherness in the room and a sort of honouring of God together in the room. And then shortly after, there was a guy, as Ossian was speaking, guy sitting just in front of me, who was really responding a lot to what Ossian was saying in a very positive way. And Ossian was asking him a bit about it. And this man, I think quite recently, had a really powerful encounter with the Holy Spirit. He just met God, in his cell. And so Ossian got him to the front, and he wanted to give his life to Jesus, and we prayed for him. And that was a really, that was a powerful, powerful moment with this guy. So that's a little bit about Prison Sundays. And as we debriefed afterwards, we thought, actually, there's quite a lot of opportunities for us to move, because our goal isn't just to run a service. Our goal is that people will encounter Jesus and that they'll be changed by Jesus and they'll experience the freedom and peace and joy that is the life that comes in Jesus. So we're talking about, I'm going to try and go in on a Thursday morning for a couple of hours. Sam and Ruth and Bex are all keen to go in during the week as well. Stan's up for going in to do some beekeeping in the prison, because Austin started beekeeping in the prison as a way of connecting with the prisoners. And so there are these different opportunities. And then Hope on Wednesday, Aaron and Mike and co are ready to receive prisoners when they come out of prison. If they want to come and be part of Hope, then we can welcome them into a community on Wednesday. So it feels like this is, that's another part of the buzz. It feels like we're doing this together as a church. This is like a community. It's not just a few people going in, but it's part of us. And I think within that, there's this joy of ministering together with Jesus. Let's have a look now at the Bible. And I want to go to, I think, let's go to Luke chapter 10, which is when Jesus sends out 72 of his followers on a kind of mission-y trip. And I think when we look at this, we see these same four characteristics of people being ready to minister, going to a different culture, only having Jesus, being out of their comfort zone. So it's Luke chapter 10, but I'm just going to take us through it quite fast. So after this, the Lord appointed 72 others and sent them out two by two ahead of them to go into every town and place. The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. So they're going out as workers. They're going out as ministers. Ask the Lord, therefore, to send out workers into his harvest field. Go, I'm sending you out like lambs among wolves. So they're going out into a different culture. And often they went to like Samaritan, where they went to different villages and towns that weren't the places that they'd grown up. They weren't familiar to them, so they didn't know the people there. And so even though they maybe spoke the same language or were the same nationality, there'd still have been a cultural stretch there. And then he says the same thing, that we could only take Jesus into the prison. Verse 4 says, do not take a purse or a bag or sandals, and do not greet anyone on the road. When you enter a house, first say peace to this house. If someone promotes peace is there, your peace will rest on them. If not, it will return to you. Stay there, eating and drinking whatever they give you, for the worker deserves his wages. Don't move around from house to house to house. And I found this concept so helpful, because I often thought that sharing our faith was this thing where we had to go and give out tracts on the street or just talk to lots and lots of people in a really socially uncomfortable way and sort of, you know, push down people's throats a message that they probably don't want to hear. And we feel like, well, I feel like quite guilty I should be saying to people. And this quite awkward dynamic. But the dynamic here that Jesus is describing in finding this person of peace is really different to that. He says, actually go and find one person, go and stay in one house, find a person of peace. A person that is sort of spiritually hungry, who's welcoming of you and your message, and is keen to hear what you're bringing, and stay with them. and invest in that relationship. And I think this is so rich to us speaking to our different contexts of home and work and community and extended family. Stay with that person, and they will serve you. They'll, you know, eat their food, drink their water. We think often that we should be providing all the stuff, but Jesus particularly says to his followers here, don't go in a place of vulnerability and dependence. So when we're in that space, I think we can feel encouraged that we're on the right sort of lines. And then the next thing you do when you enter a town and are welcomed, eat what's offered to you, heal the sick who are there, and tell them the kingdom of God has come near to you. And so, or certainly for me, that would be a stretch moment out of my comfort zone, you know, initiating praying for healing for people and so on. I think for Jesus, it probably wasn't out of his comfort zone. It's probably quite instinctive to him. Maybe it will be for me as well one day. And then let's have a look at an example of where Jesus does this. Let's go on now to John chapter 4. Remembering our four little pictures here. Now we've got Jesus going to a different cultural area. He goes to Samaria, so different, sort of slightly different ethnic people to his own. And John chapter 4, verse 1, Jesus learned that the Pharisees, we'll skip that bit, he left Judea, and he came through Samaria, verse 4, came to a town in Samaria called Sychar, and then he went and sat down by a well. It was about noon. Verse 7 says, when a Samaritan woman came to draw water, Jesus said to her, will you give me a drink? So I think in terms of our images here, I think Jesus is always like, he's always ready to minister. And here, he's in his different culture. And then getting on to picture 3, he hasn't really got anything for this woman to give her. So he says, will you give me a drink? The Samaritan woman said to him, you're a Jew and I'm a Samaritan woman. How can you ask me for a drink? Jesus answers, here we go, he's giving her only Jesus. He's giving her Jesus here. If you knew the gift of God and who it is that asks you for a drink, you'd have asked him and he would have given you living water. And this goes on, and she's gradually discovers who Jesus is, and it continues. And it comes to the point when she realizes, gosh, this is the Messiah. Jesus has said to her, revealed to her truths about her life, that there's no other way that he would have known. And then she then goes and she gets her whole village. Where is that? So she then goes back to her village and gets the whole village, and they come back to meet Jesus, and he stays with them for several days. And so he's just lived out that exact same model of he's found a person of peace in this Samaritan woman, and he's revealed himself to her in the simplicity of who he was, and she has then opened the connection into her whole sort of social world, her whole community. And what I love about it is I think this is such a simple thing that we can relate to in our everyday lives, finding a person of peace, and being able to go deep with them. It's a real joy, isn't it? I think Hannah Lehman is so good at this. So she's worked at Hope now, I looked it up the other day, I think about 17 years. And I love the way that she goes deep with certain individual people. And I watched it happen. And so people who don't yet know Jesus. And it's a very natural, she's just someone that she loves to be with. And she goes deep with that person. And over time, I've seen it happen with lots of people who've got to know Hannah, is that they've caught from her her faith. It's infectious. They've been around and they've seen how the impact that Jesus makes on her life, and they've been changed as a result by being around Hannah, and it's a rich thing. So I'd love you to have that person of peace concept in mind. These four images here I think can apply to each of our different settings in our daily life. And I'd like to just finish really by having three examples from within Hope of not directly about people of peace, person of peace, but it's about being influential in our workplaces and our communities to bring the presence and the reality of God. And I think there's such a joy. I think it's marked by joy. And my first example, looking at Rachel Peregrine, because I'm a chair of governors at Hotwells Primary School over the road, and I was reading, and I get an email every week or two from the CEO of the trust that we're part of. We're part of a trust with about 21 schools, and the email was Rachel was quoted quite a lot in the I don't know if you even read it, Rachel, but in the email from the CEO, Rachel was quoted for some training that she'd been doing for head teachers, and the quote that I remember was, "Inclusion and academic achievement are two sides of the same coin." Rachel Peregrine. Okay. Well, you were given the credit for it. And I just read that, and it was so lovely to see you being quoted there. So Rachel's like Director of Inclusion for this trust. Is that the right title? Yeah, Director of Inclusion for this trust. And I love that because the heart of Rachel within inclusion is about bringing children with additional needs, particularly, into the centre of education. And isn't that a Jesus value? Isn't that a Jesus priority, bringing those who are on the edge into the very centre? And I just think, and I was just smiled reading that, and I thought, yeah, I can imagine Rach being in that trust, having that influence over, like, what's it, like 12,000 kids or something, plus all of their families and huge number of people. And what she's carrying is this culture of those who could be on the edge and could be finding things harder, let's put them right in the middle and make sure that we are serving them really well. That's a brilliant example of Jesus' kingdom culture being lived out in the workplace. The second one was, I had a coffee with Andy on Wednesday, Andy Robinson just there, and I always like tracking with him about his work. So he's worked for Unilever for almost 20 years in different sort of running different factories and different settings, and so things like pot noodles, and then more recently it's been Gray's. But what was before pot noodles? Hellman's. I said mayonnaise, is that? Yeah, mayonnaise, great, okay, great. So Andy's been influential on our cupboards and dinner tables in various ways. I like the story. What I see in Andy is some of the way that he cares for his employees and those that work in the factories that he's responsible for. Particularly because the dynamic with lots of these big corporate settings is things like cost-cutting comes through and that redundancies and stuff. They're just part of the furniture, part of the landscape. But Andy treats people with such care and such. And I started probing him, asking, "Tell me some stories." And the recent one was a lady who'd been on maternity leave and was coming back and wanted to go on from 5 days to 4 days because she was returning from maternity leave. But Andy knew that actually her job was at risk of redundancy, and she didn't know that, and others didn't know that. He wasn't directly her line manager, but said to her line manager, "Hey, please, can you just encourage this lady we'll keep her on 5 days, but she can start off just working 4, and because he wanted to preserve the amount of pay that she would get for redundancy, and because it would be significantly reduced if she went down to 4 days, and so responsible for the budget and everything else of this operation, Andy was sort of taking that hit in order to look after this particular employee. And he didn't need to. He could have upped his profits a little bit more, couldn't he? By just squeezing that little bit extra. It wasn't even a direct employee of his, But nonetheless, he cared for that person in this very practical and tangible way. Another example, and he also just mentioned that he'd gone back to pot noodles recently after the first time in 5 years going back to that factory, and that had been a hard time that they'd been there. I remember he talked about some of the stress of it. It was like a really stressful job, and again, it went through some significant cuts to make a lot of redundancies in that factory. But when he went there, having not been for 5 years, people were really excited to see him. People were coming off the shop floor to come and find Andy, giving him a big hug, and just really grateful for him and appreciative. And isn't that awesome to have Andy steering and shaping culture in a kingdom way, able to bless individuals and serve people in his workplace? And again, I think that's the joy of ministering together with Jesus. And I wonder if Andy, sometimes we need to take a moment in the hecticness. Same for you, Rach, as well. I imagine your job's probably stressful and like intense and full on. I wonder if you get a moment to take the time and just actually, I've been championing these children. This is ministry together with Jesus, and just savoring that and appreciating that. Thank you, Lord, that I get to do that and just savoring that moment. And now Andy's moving into a new job. This time Unilever's finished, and he's moving into something Fisher, making medical products. I forget the exact. Petri dishes, I think, is going to be your speciality. And again, it's just good hearing with that, Andy's sense of being led by God into this new season, nudged by God towards this company. And again, this is ministry together with Jesus. What a joy. And then our third example, where's Rob? Here he is, great. Rob, come and tell us about what you've been developing.
Thank you. Hey, you guys. I had a moment a few months ago where my anonymous child, I won't name which one, was throwing an absolute tantrum. And I was just stood there, and we get multiple tantrums in our house like any parent does. And I just stood there going, what do I do? Nothing seems to be working. So I turned to my wife while my child is on the floor going nuts. And I said, what do we do? What do we do? And so my wife said, do the breathing exercise. And I was like, which breathing exercise? I don't know one. So I was then stood there being taught a breathing exercise while my kid is still stuck on the floor having a tantrum. And it just felt like absolute chaos. And it was. In that moment, we had no peace. And I just thought, over the next few days, like, what can I do? There must be some sort of tool or something that helps, you know, the child in that moment and the adult. So I sat down, had a little look online, wasn't much there. And then I thought, oh, what if I made a book? So I've made some breathing books. And what's nice about this is actually the process. I selfishly made it to help me. But actually, as part of it, I actually got the ideas from my children. So they sat down with me and I said, okay, let's make some breathing books. What ideas do you have? So we've got unicorn, mermaid, pirates, astronauts, and then just a general one. And basically, the hope with these is it's a case of how do we help children in those moments where there's big emotions, where there's maybe anxiety, stress, anger, worry. How do we help them? Well, actually, I was like, let's make a tool to help the child. And also, how do we help the adult who's going, oh, I need something. And so I've made these books. They're called My Breathing Books. And they're interactive breathing books for children to help them regulate, to reset, to relax. We sometimes use them when our kids are brushing their teeth. And we go, okay, let's relax, let's reset. Here's something to do. Let's brush your teeth. We use them on the way to school if they're anxious or worried. And also we definitely use it with the anonymous child when they're super angry. And so we've just found these is a really good tool. And in some sense, I felt quite selfish. I was like, I need to help other people with this. So we've got it published, and I've got some today that people can take with them, sort of thing, to trial it and see if it helps them with your child and helps you as an adult. But basically, yeah, I just thought, I want to help other people, you know. I want to support children, help children. I want to support adults and help them. How does this chaotic moment become a bit more peaceful? So I thought, let's try and make a tool. And I'm just really hopeful that, you know, people can utilize it and that God can be in those moments of chaos.
So I've looked at the videos as well. There's some videos of those. So you can see Rob's books, and we'll share it in the next Hope News as well. Really cool resource. And bringing it back to Jesus and the woman at the well, Jesus could have got himself some water, probably. He could have made some water, I suppose, couldn't he? He could have just had the water from the woman and then left her to get on with her day. He didn't have to change her world in that moment, yet it was within his power to. And there was that deeper reality about God, life, and her experience that he helped her to move into. And I think that's the privilege that we have as people who can minister with Jesus in our everyday settings, in the way that we influence the culture, the way that we relate to our colleagues, the way that we respond to problems. All of these model and demonstrate a life lived with Jesus. And when we're close enough that people can see it and observe it and catch it from us, then they're seeing the reality in the presence of Jesus in a way that surely is going to be infectious and contagious. And I think that's God's design, is that we are the light of the world, we are the salt of the world, that Jesus says, that it's the reality and the presence of Jesus in us. And it's just that stepping out or stepping up really into a deeper truth of who we are, a higher identity, which involves these four things. That we can see change come in our different contexts. Isn't it such a buzz? Do you feel the buzz, Rob, from having done those books? Yeah, you've created some books together with Jesus. It's really cool. And they're gonna help children and adults, and it's just really cool. So as we come into land, I'd love us to respond in prayer in two ways. I think one of them is the excitement of this. For me, it starts with the prison thing, and it's the joy of doing that together. And actually, I think in recent weeks as well, like Hope on Wednesday and Food Bank here on Wednesdays, these are some of the groups that I'm closest to, so you might be more aware of other ones. But they're really buzzing at the moment. There's real joy there. There's fresh stories of people encountering Jesus and being changed, and people being able to minister Jesus to each other over a bowl of soup, seeing homeless people have breakthroughs in housing that they haven't had for years. We've seen answers to prayer along those lines, seeing people connecting with their families, seeing people freed from stuff that they haven't been ever. There's this really good thing, and it's such a joy, it's such a buzz. And so one of my prayers is that we'd all, everyone who wants to be, who's part of Hope, would find a sort of community space with whom we can be ministering together with Jesus as church, as extended church family. So that's the first thing. I'd love to just pray that as a prayer for us as a church. And then the second one is about praying for our everyday contexts, your homes, workplaces, places of education, and really to pray for those spaces, and who are the people of, who's a person of peace for you in that setting, what does God say to you about your influence and presence in that setting? I think Duncan, if you can in a minute, if you could lead us in a song as we do that, have that second prayer. So can I are you okay if I start us off with a prayer for us as a body, as a gathered church, and then we'll go into our more personal responses. So, Lord Jesus, I want to thank you that you've called us as Hope to join in with the ministry that you're doing. And we're really grateful for areas like the prison, for example, that's opening up as an area of us being able to minister together with Jesus. Thank you for the joy that there is in that. Thank you for the excitement that there is in that. And I want to pray for more for us, that each of us within Hope can find that, be part of that shared community ministry together with Jesus, and to know that joy. So, Lord, will you bless our existing areas of ministry, our existing communities, our boats and our life groups and our different areas of ministry within Hope. Bless those and draw in others who would like to be part of those. And also, if there's fresh things for us to start as well, Lord, will you inspire us and reveal those to us if there are fresh initiatives that we can start where we can minister together in community. That's the first prayer. Amen. And the second one is, Lord, now I just want to spend some time considering our workplaces and homes and communities and different settings where we spend most of our time. And we'd love you to speak to us and inspire us. Reveal to us people of peace in those different settings. Show us how we can bring your culture and your presence. Amen. So Duncan's just going to come and lead us in a song, and maybe find music a helpful way, worshipping a helpful way to sit in that prayer and keep considering that before God.